Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
People come to this country and to New York to fulfill all kinds of goals and dreams. But do people come to New York City with the dream to farm? You've probably been to one of the 44 green markets around the city, but how much do you know about your farmer, the man, the woman who produces all your food? Do you know where he or she comes from, where their farm is, and what they had to do to get it started? We're joined this morning by Kate Granger, the project director of the New Farmer Development Program that's been designed to help low-income families and recent immigrants get their farms up and running. Also joining us is Sergio Nolasco, owner of Nolasco's Farm in New Jersey and member of the New Farmer Development Program. Good morning to you both, and welcome to WNYC.
Thanks very much.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Sergio Nolasco.
Sergio, where did you immigrate from, and why did you want to start a farm?
I was growing a farm. My family has a farm. Mm-hmm. They grow a lot of sugar cane, corn, peppers, tomatoes. And
Where was your farm?
In Mexico. My farm over here is in Andover, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. We have 14 acres, and we farming already 10 acres right now. Yeah.
And how did you get involved in this program?
Really, I was living in the city, and I come to buy on Sundays on Jackson Heights Green Market. I come to buy vegetables, and I feel like live in my town, and I eat fresh vegetables better than the supermarket. And I make a friends over there, farmers, and I come to help some people to New Jersey first year. And we try to keep doing. We see something short in the markets, like for the Spanish population, it's grow faster in the city. And mostly farmers was growing not too much hot peppers and like Mexican greens, papalos, epazote.
Right, you were looking for things that you couldn't find here, right?
Right. So I see, and I say, we can start to do myself, and we can grow something different.
Which is actually where Kate comes in. Kate,
yes.
You have been part of this program and operating in New York for about 30 years. Tell us about it. How many people are involved, and how's it running? How's it going?
The New Farmer Development Project started in 2000, and we've helped about 18 farmers and their families start businesses in that time. There's a huge amount of agricultural experience in New York City's immigrant communities, and so this project is designed to tap into that and help the people who have the experience, just provide them with the resources and the information they need to start successful businesses here in this region.
Now, yeah. I just want to make it clear, Kate, that this is not a state agency. This is not a state-run program, although you do receive funding from different sources.
Yes, absolutely. We receive federal funding. We receive city funding. But we are a project within Green Market, which is itself a project within the Council of the Environment, which is a 501c3 nonprofit.
And, you know, this Sergio brought up a great point, which is that he was essentially looking for items that he used to cook with back home and he couldn't find here. So has this project really helped diversify the kinds of foods that you can find in this city?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think being able to grow some of those vegetables and those products has really been the secret to Sergio's success as a farmer. He is growing things like papalo and pepicha, epazote, alache, very traditional products that you just couldn't find fresh in the city anywhere else. And so to be able to find those fresh and to be able to buy them in an open-air market, I think that reminds a lot of people of home, and they can cook the traditional foods mm-hmm. that they've been longing to cook, and it's been a real help for him.
Now, we've probably got some folks listening right now who are thinking, I'd love to get involved or pass this information on to a friend, family member. How do you qualify? How do you get that information?
They can call us. They can go on the online. If they go to www.cemyc.org, they can find the contact information for us. And basically, the only requirements are we are serving immigrants and mm-hmm. people who have ag experience.
What kind of experience do you need to have?
You know, we're looking for people who grew up on farms, who know what it takes to be a farmer. I mean, I couldn't teach anybody to be a farmer, you know, in 12 weeks or in a year. I mean, you've got to go out, you've got to get your hands dirty, you've got to have that experience. So finding people who have that experience and maybe just don't know where the land is or where to buy seeds, we can provide that information. That's no problem. But we are looking for people who have, you know, significant farming experience already.
Sure. And we'll definitely have that link on our website to your information as well. The actual program itself, how cost-effective is it? I mean, it's expensive. Property here is wildly expensive.
Yeah.
So in terms of the price per acre, the kinds of crops that they're growing, mm-hmm. and the money they're able to make, how does the business model work?
Well, most of the farmers start out by renting land. And, you know, that's not just immigrant farmers or low-income farmers. A lot of farmers in this region, because farmland is so prohibitively expensive in this area, start out renting. Beyond that, our relationship with Green Market is really what makes this a viable model, because farmers can grow a lot of different vegetables on a very small acreage and sell directly to the consumer. They're cutting out the middleman.
Right.
There's nobody taking a percentage. They're getting 100% of the profits. That is what makes them able to start up in this way, to start on a very small scale and sell directly to their clients.
I want to bring Sergio back into this conversation. I'm Alice Rhee, and for Brian Lehr, and we're speaking to Sergio Nolasco and Kate Granger with the New Farmer Development Program. Sergio, we know that food prices are up quite a bit. You go to the grocery store and you can feel it immediately. Have you noticed that demand is up, that people are still willing to pay the same prices? Have you kept the prices the same? Or is it up? What are you finding as you sell?
No, really the price is going up. I mean, everything is going up. And
what you're charging is going up?
Yeah.
Okay.
Everything is going up. I mean, I pay more for a market right now for a rate out of market, and we had to sell a little bit higher.
Give me an example.
Okay.
What's your price change?
I mean, I was paid for day of market. I was paid before $60, so now the market cost me $70.
Okay.
So it's $10 up. And tolls, when you come to the city and to the market, it was
sure.
$8. Now it's $10.
Sure. So,
yeah.
But are people still willing to pay? Are you finding that they're not shopping as much? Are you still selling as much produce?
No. Really, people still pay because people like, I think people from the city, they like to keep farmers. And I mean, some people, they understand and they still keep supporting our farmers, and people come and buy, really. Some people, I mean, complain about the prices, but...
They do complain about prices, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes.
And where do you sell? What parts of the city do you sell in?
We have five markets in the city. We have a market in Inwood. I do market and Tuesdays. And Popar, this is on the Bronx.
Mm-hmm.
I do market in Sunnyside.
Sure.
Jackson Heights, Queens.
So over the city.
Yes.
Well, I want to thank both of you for being with us today, Kate Granger and Sergio Nolasco with the New Farmer Development Program. Happy gardening to you both.
Thank you.
And we'll have that information on our website. Thank you. Now let's get to farming up the side of a building. We've been talking to urban farms about urban farms and green markets, and most people, even New Yorkers, can picture a rural farm, but what about vertical farms? I'm not talking about pole beans. I'm talking about 30-story indoor vertical farms with enough livestock and fresh food to feed 50,000 people. Now, that's local eating. Imagine taking the elevator to the 24th floor to pick up your organic arugula. Agriculture takes up about 40% of the Earth's landmass. But Dixon Despommiers, professor at Columbia University, is trying to change that. Good morning, professor.
Good morning.
Now, start from the beginning. You came up with this idea through a project at Columbia you and your students.
That's correct. It started out as a rooftop gardening project about 10 years ago. I got about halfway through a course that I have called medical ecology, which has as the premise when you damage ecological process, there's a health risk to pay for it. I teach up here at the Health Sciences Center at Columbia. And so these students had a big interest in trying to make a difference in terms of the public's health. So I said, okay, halfway through this course, there's so much gloom and doom, maybe we ought to do something positive for the second half of this course. So I said, what would you like to do? And they said, we'll get back to you. And so when they did, the next week, they said, well, maybe we should try some rooftop gardening projects. And I said, okay. I said, why don't you tell me how much land on the rooftops of Manhattan there is, commercial buildings aside, and tell me what kind of crops you would grow in order to feed the population of Manhattan, which was at that point about 2.3 million people.
This is when? What year?
This is 1999.
Okay.
And they came up with 13 acres of rooftop, and they the most energetic crop you can grow is rice,
mm-hmm.
and you can feed about 2% of Manhattan like this, and so that didn't look like a very good solution, and they actually got a little surly at the end of my course. And
students getting surly, okay.
They almost accused me of making them do work that had no purpose, too, and I said, look, you guys learn how to behave as a group. You're going to have to do that when you get out into the real world anyway. So you answered the problem. It just wasn't the answer you were looking for.
And so led you to the idea of the vertical farm.
Exactly. So I said, look at all these abandoned buildings and open lots in New York City. Why don't we just convert those to high-rise farms?
So give us the strict definition, as you've sort of imagined it, of a vertical farm. What does it actually look like? I've seen some of the renderings.
Yeah, well, you haven't seen the one that I would produce. If I could draw, I would draw you one. But these have all been submitted as volunteers, people who got the idea in their head and said, gee, I know what one should look like, and then they've submitted them to us. Actually, if you go to Fifth Avenue into the Apple Store and you take a look at that building, which is not exactly a building, it's like the entrance to a beautiful store, you take that glass structure and make it five or six stories high and maybe an eighth of a city block and fill it with the crops that we're used to eating, like lettuce and, like you said, arugula, green beans, of course. In fact, you can grow anything you want. All you have to do is go up to the Bronx Botanical Garden and find that out. All the crops of the world can be grown indoors if you really wanted to. And fill that building with those crops, and the next thing you know, you've got fresh produce all year long.
But what you're talking about, I want to make that distinction. I mean, greenhouses, indoor gardening, hydroponic gardening, that's nothing particularly new. But you're talking about buildings that are 30 stories high and growing food up the side or all over this structure that could literally dot Manhattan with buildings. We could be smelling fresh basil off Fifth Avenue, literally, correct?
This is very true. There's no reason why we can't do it. There are no technical barriers for creating well-engineered, beautifully designed, and executed buildings that might feed, indeed, as much as 50,000 people. That was one of our student projects, is to tell me how big a building we need to create in order to feed 50,000 people per year comfortably, and using mm-hmm. crops that can already be grown indoors. And that's their project. That's what they came up with.
I'm Alice Rhee in for Brian Lehrer, and I'm speaking to Dixon Despommier about vertical farming. We would love to take your calls and questions. Give us a shout here at 646-778-3729, 646-778-3729. All right, Professor, let's talk about the business model, the economics of it.
Sure.
Real estate in the city, obscenely expensive. We touched on that in our previous interview.
Right.
So the investment banker, the Wall Street tycoon who's willing to pay, you know, God knows how much for a square foot of a skyscraper.
Yeah.
And we want to replace that with rice. How does that work? And
well,
also the building of one of these towers.
Well, there is a lot of property in New York City that people are not quite aware of in terms of New York thinking. Floyd Bennett Air Force Base. Floyd Bennett Air Force Base is one of those places. The Gowanus Canal Zone is another place.
Okay.
Even Governor's Island is another place. And there are a lot of abandoned properties, a lot of abandoned apartment houses in the peripheral sections of New York City that could easily be converted to these kinds of things.
Right. So you're saying it doesn't have to be on Fifth Avenue.
That's exactly right.
Now, a prototype. We don't have one yet, obviously, but
right.
to create one,
yep.
how long would it take? How much would it cost?
Sure.
Maybe in the millions, as I've read. And really, who's willing to show up with some cash at your doorstep, Professor?
Yeah, well, no one has done that yet, of course, but I'm more than willing. The door is open. There's no locks. Come on in.
T. Boone Pickens? Yeah.
But I can tell you that there are cities that are now planning these. One of them is Dubai. The city of Dubai is planning one. The city of Chicago is planning one. The city of San Francisco is planning one.
They're actually planning a prototype tower?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Shanghai is another place that's planning one. let's see, where else? Las Vegas has shown a strong interest in this, but they haven't actually made a move in that direction yet. But there are groups of people in all of these places that have pooled their resources together and said, and Incheon, Korea, by the way, is another place that I just remembered.
Sure.
So as soon as, and New York City has expressed interest here, too, through Scott Stringer's office. That's correct.
So feasibly, when could we see something like this?
Well, if the resources showed up tomorrow, let's say if I had the team that I could assemble to actually design a prototype, if we could meet tomorrow to start work, I guarantee you that we could have one constructed in 2 years and fully functional in 3 to 5 years. And from that, you can then predict how soon you could build that 30-story building that would feed 50,000 people. It's a matter of when, it's not if.
You know, we've got a caller on the line, Bill from Brooklyn. Go ahead, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi. I don't quite get it. Growing up the side of buildings?
No. I think it was misstated. It's actually in the building itself.
Hydroponics?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Why don't you explain that, Professor? Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
No, it's not along the side of the building. It's within the building itself. So a series of high-tech greenhouses, but all engineered in such a way as to handle the water resources and the energy resources to make it a viable sort of a reflection of an ecosystem, but indoors.
Let's take another caller. Michael from Soho, you're on the phone.
Hi, I don't agree with any of this.
Okay.
First of all, what is going to be happening is that the transportation system in the city of New York, first of all, I grow fruit and vegetables on the rooftop here down here in Soho.
Okay.
I have too many peaches at certain times.
Too many. Okay.
Too many. I have to give them away. I go down the street and give
them
to a friend.
I'll stop by. All right.
But put that aside. With the cost of transportation, bringing people back into the city because they're going to have to live closer to their jobs, a lot of the peripheral land around the city is going to become available for growing again. And starting to use property that is going way up in value to do something like this, no wonder nobody's willing to fund him. If I owned a building in New York, even if it was abandoned, I'd be looking to fix up that building and get What's a single bedroom apartment costing right now?
I know,
$3,000 a month.
I know, it's just obscene. Thanks for your call, Michael. Professor,
I have an answer to him. Is at a certain time of the year, you've got a lot of peaches, but you don't get peaches all year long. So one of the big advantages of farming indoors in tall buildings is that you get continuous crop production. The other advantage is you get no weather related crop failures. So it's all done in a controlled environment. And the third thing, of course, is you get whatever kind of food you'd like any time of the year.
So it is the ultimate local food, yeah.
That's right. And it doesn't have to be in Soho. I agree with him that Soho is a very, very pricey place to put these things. But there are plenty of reasonably priced city properties out there begging for use that this could easily fit into.
Let's take another caller. We've got Al on the phone from Brooklyn. Good morning, Al.
Yes, hi. This kind of segues to your last comment. It doesn't have to be a separate building that's using these agricultural features.
Right.
It would be an amenity to office and residential structures while it's also doubling as a solar shade and insulating layer to a building, because these are areas that can be opened or closed depending on whether you want to capture or release heat during the winter or the summer.
Yep.
And it's an amenity for the people who are in the building. Look at the Ford Foundation building that has a giant garden inside its lobby. That's an amenity. Why can't they do the same thing while planting other kinds of plants?
Of course you can. Sure, and the response to that is that what about restaurants? What about schools and hospitals and senior citizens' facilities? This doesn't have to be a 30-story building that's freestanding. This could be integrated, as this gentleman just said, into the urban landscape so that it distributes food wherever the people live, and it places it right next to where you actually are going to eat it. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And, in fact, the new designs for some of the restaurants that I've seen out in San Francisco and in Thailand and other places like this are integrating hydroponic facilities into the restaurant themselves. So all you have to do is go in the back and pick your own romaine lettuce if you want to have some Caesar salad with some crispy chicken. You can just go back with the restaurateur and pick it for yourself.
We've also got another caller on the line, Councilman Jim Keady from New Jersey. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm very interested. I'm a councilman in the city of Asbury Park down in Jersey Shore.
Lovely.
We've got a number of development projects going on. The city has made a real commitment for us to try to be as green as we possibly can.
Yep.
And I'd like to see a proposal. You know, what do you need in terms of land? What the exact dollar amount would be? You know, and I'm extremely interested. So
sounds like there could be a deal going on here.
Forward?
Thank you, Councilman. Professor, it sounds like you have some takers here.
There's number one.
And in fact, just before we get to the last word, can you just throw out, have you heard from any celebrities, any billionaires who want to fund this, really?
Well, actually, there's a group that's been interviewed for a film that's about to be released from the, I guess it's a film that was originally shown at the Sundance Film Festival, and it got the best audience vote. I don't know what that means, but they interviewed people like Willie Nelson and Sheryl Crow and Woody Harrelson and myself.
Professor, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Dixon Despommier at Columbia University. And coming up next, The Real Deal on Alternative Medicine, and John McCain hits New Jersey. I'm Alice Rhee, and for Brian Lehrer.